The GOAT is retiring. Tell some Saban stories. Who's going to get the job? We have a debate about whether parades suck or not.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Alabama, because of Saban, sees itself as IBM. In fact, they're a whole lot more like Feinbaum show callers.
Ross Gellinger.
In the last, I would say, 8 to 10, the theme among so many in the SEC, from coaches to administrators, is when the hell is he leaving, right? And it's finally here.
And SI's Pat Forty.
In an obsessive profession, he was the gold standard of obsessive. Just never letting up. Complacency was to be feared. It was the rat poison.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
I went with a pod. Emergency. No Johnny Walker tonight.
Johnny Walker, you know what? There's some Arizona wheat beer in Phoenix, man. I needed one for this.
All right, Pat's drinking.
College sports is driving me to drink.
We're in mourning. Daddy is leaving us. Daddy is running away. He's abandoning us in our time of need. Our spiritual leader. Running through a tin horn.
There's as good Sabanism.
Yep, that is a good one.
Coach Saban, 72 years old. Is retiring from the University of Alabama in college football coaching, as far as, you know, per 297, 71, and 1 in 28 years. And I'm counting the vacated victories. There was a couple vacations in there. I hate that.
Mm-hmm.
Hate vacated victories. 7 national championships, 1 at LSU, 6 at Alabama. 17 seasons at Alabama. He won 87.7% of his games. Ridiculous. 10 SEC titles at Alabama. 2 at LSU. Had the 6 national titles at Alabama. Other than that first season when he went 7-6, but there was some vacating, supposedly something, who knows. 10 wins every other season. A 16-year stretch that I believe is the best coaching stretch in the history of college football. There's no asterisk on this.
Yeah.
16 straight years, 10 SEC titles, 10 wins every single year. A bad year was 3 losses. In the knife fight, knock down, drag out, cheat your ass off if you can, SEC. No holds bar, battle royal. Everyone coming at you. And he kept winning. Poison Trees SEC era. Saban was the constant. Immovable object. Relentless pursuit of perfection. 10 number one recruiting classes. Did everything. The best coaching tree you'll ever see in modern times. Coaches wanted to coach for him. Players wanted to play for him. First round draft picks everywhere. NFL stars everywhere. Depth of talent everywhere. His second team could have won 8-9 games. Every single thing. The way he carried himself, the way the program carried itself, the way Tuscaloosa, Alabama once again became the center of college football. That was Nick Saban over the last 16 years. I know there are champagne bottles getting popped all over the South.
They did roll the trees at Toomer's Corner.
You're an SEC coach.
It's quite amazing. That's a great point, Dan. Like it's amazing. You know, I covered the SEC as a beat writer and obviously a national reporter the last 5 years for close to 15 years. In the last, I would say, 8 to 10, the theme among so many in the SEC, from coaches to administrators is, when the hell is he leaving? Right? And it's finally here.
He come in and beat you for recruits and beat you in the game.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Thoughts, Pat?
Yeah, the greatest of all time just left the building. I don't think there's much doubt about it. Some old school people might want to make a case for Bear Bryant. Maybe like Bud Wilkinson or something, but no way. No way. 7 titles, the most anybody's ever had. And as Dan said, doing it in this era, in that conference, never, ever, ever appreciably slipping. Like I said, 3 losses a bad year. He barely even had that. There was like, what, 10-3 season in 2010? Most of it, you know, lose one. Sometimes lose none. Just incredible dominance. Incredible, like a consistency of everything. Like consistent approach, consistent focus, consistent effort, consistent recruiting, consistent game planning, consistent execution. The Bama machine just never wavered because Saban never did. And if it's that point where he's at 72, he finally said, man, you know what? I really can't give it that absolute unwavering focus like I always have. Maybe that's what eventually now has led him to retirement. But I will say, age 69, he won his last title. Age 72, he went back to the playoff and took the national champion Michigan Wolverines to overtime, and for a while looked like they were absolutely going to win that game. So he really hadn't lost his fastball or his changeup or his knuckle, any of that. I mean, just incredible. You know, you started to suspect, gosh, maybe he'd go to 75, maybe he'd go to 80. But happy to see him walk away in a good place, you know, with his team and his program on top. And signs are that he's healthy. So go enjoy the lake with Miss Terry, and we'll carry on without you.
Yeah. He goes out like few coaches go out, right? Pretty, maybe not on top, but as still a dynasty, 10, 11, 12 win dynasty of college in college football the last few years. Incredibly successful. Goes out as an SEC champion, you know, CFP semifinal participant. I think a lot of people thought probably that he would only go out on top. I remember thinking after the 2021 season, given that year, COVID, he had turned 60. I guess he would have been 69 or 70 that year. I actually thought that he might retire after that championship, because a lot of people around him thought he's going to retire with a championship. But when he didn't, I remember talking to somebody who, you know, I think knows him pretty well and said, it will be in the next 2 or 3 years. And, you know, 3 years later, here we are. As we're talking, there's some other breaking news from 24/7 from some folks who really know the Alabama football program inside and out. I think you would trust what they report. And that's John Tolte, used to be at AO.com. Mike Zenitz also used to be at AO.com. Now they're at 24/7 Sports. And they reported that Nick Saban, in his address to the team, cited his age and actually his health and potential health concerns. So that's interesting. Obviously, it was pretty obvious the last – I started noticing that year in 2020, that COVID year, that Nick Saban had, man, really looked kind of aged and tired. And then this year, and we talked about this on the show – a few times this year. I remember talking about it after the Texas A&M game. Guys, remember I said he came in after that game and he was almost laughing because he couldn't believe they won the game. And it's like, man, that is not like Nick Saban. And there was a lot of those instances throughout the season. I covered the Iron Bowl. It was kind of similar.
Same thing.
Yeah, it was kind of similar after the Iron Bowl. You know, after the SEC championship game, not so much. But you just saw those little flashes a little bit, and there were some signs here and there, and you know, a lot of coaches like him who are still winning at an incredible rate can't let it go and can't leave it. And I remember always hearing that Nick Saban won't be that that guy, that he will leave it and that he won't let it dip too far before he leaves it. So he's certainly got Alabama in a pretty great place. And the problem, which I'm sure we'll get to, is the pool of coaches is quite shallow.
Yeah, we'll get to who replaces him. But I agree. Look, you lose in overtime to the eventual national champs. I mean, I think the way the game played out, obviously a different matchup if it's Washington and Alabama, but if Alabama had beaten Michigan, I don't think it's unfair to say Alabama would have won the national title. And I think he knew that. He did show some of those signs. And I do remember him saying that after that A&M game. And I remember after him kind of laughing on the field after beating Auburn on the, improbable, what was it, 31, fourth and 31. And it took me back, and I actually wrote about this scene. Tua Tagovailoa told this story about when he came into the championship game in 17 as a freshman. They throw him in there, and they're in overtime trailing by three, and he takes a sack, 16-yard sack on first down of overtime, and they're way back on the 41, and it's looking bad. And then he throws this perfect, looks off the safety and throws this perfect pass to Devonta Smith, and they win the national championship. And he runs into Saban after, and Saban says, "Why? What were you thinking taking a sack on first down?" That's what he said to him.
Now, thanks for winning the national championship.
Great job, kid. Unbelievable, yeah. Kid. Freshman. Now, what were you thinking taking a sack on first down? So Tua, he told this story in the Rich Eisen show, being a teenager at the time, said, you thought I'd make a joke. He said, I'll give you the quote. I thought I'd make a joke. I thought it would be a good time to joke with him. I mean, we just won the national championship. So I told him, well, we needed more room to throw the ball, coach. And he said, Saban glared at him and said, that's not funny. So it's a great story. but to Ross's point, like, he won the national title and he's not sitting there going, great job. It's I told you not to take a sack on first down. You take a sack on first down, you get rid of the ball, right? He was always coaching. I recall one year he's at the SEC title game and they win the SEC title. They probably beat Florida too. It was a big game. And I'm down on the field and, they're up on the little stand or whatever. They build the stand and give the trophy. And everyone's hugging and confetti and everything's going on. I see Saban's taking notes. He's got a little piece of paper and he's writing a little note. And I asked the PR guy at the time, I said, can I ask him after? Will you get me him for one question? I just want to ask him what he wrote down. I said, I know he's busy and all that. I'm not trying to get some big, long interview. So he goes and tells Saban what I want to ask him. And Saban, I think, liked it that someone noticed or whatever. And he said he was writing a note to make sure to tell the guys what time the banquet was the next day. Banquet's at 6. He didn't want to forget. And that was the relentlessness of this man. Yeah. There was no celebrations.
No.
Give me a little Debbie snack cake and, call a recruit. Yeah. He never let up.
Never.
Ever, ever, ever. He complained about being in the national title game. He's missing a home visit somewhere. Yeah. Like, well, maybe they're watching you win the national title with the other coach in their living room. He never let up, and that was the thing. And I'll just say quickly, everyone was coming to knock off the king, right? So Urban Meyer comes after him at Florida, and then Urban burns out. And he beat him once. He beat, whatever. He got there. But then he burned out. Then he went to Ohio State and took his another crack at him. He beat him once, but then he burned out. Dabo took some shots at him, got there, won a couple titles, burned out. Les Miles couldn't last. Coach O couldn't last. None of these guys. Hugh Freeze. They all fell apart. He just kept going.
Yeah.
They couldn't stay at his level. Kirby Smart got there. Guess who won the last game? Saban. That's as close as anyone's gotten. So everybody in the country went after this guy for 16 years, but it's the same guy they're going after. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's the thing. And then, yes, that anecdote from the SEC championship game, which I remember you writing it. I remember being there at that game with you, was perfect, Saban. And that was it. He never was overtly giddy. He was not a big celebrator. Now, he did jump up in joy when Tua threw that bomb, when they suddenly won the title. But very rarely, accustomed to that sort of thing. He was not never one to revel in his accomplishments, because I think he was always deathly afraid that as soon as you did that, you stopped accomplishing. So you had to always be doing what's next and what was going to keep you on top. And it's just an incredible amount in an obsessive profession. He was the gold standard of obsessive, of just never letting up. Complacency was to be feared. It was the rat poison. Stayed away from that at all costs. And he got the thing that impressed me, guys, one of the many, many things, but he recruited elite level guys. We got them to play like they were, scrapper walk-ons. They played so hard. They were so competitive. They hit hard as hell. They were unbelievably prepared. The longer you gave Saban to prepare, the more ready they were. The game I remember when they played LSU for the second time in 2011, they lost at home 9-6, and they played the rematch in the championship game. They were so totally prepared for everything LSU was going to do that LSU did not cross midfield until, I think, the final minutes. It was 21-0. It wasn't even that close. It was like, you give me another shot at those guys, it's over. We're taking care of them. That was the kind of preparation and intensity and focus that he had for the job.
Yeah, and you give him any time to prepare, any extra time to prepare, right? And he usually won those games. That's what made this past year's playoff and Michigan's win even more impressive, because they beat him after he had a month to prepare. And usually he's really, really good in those games. And I think he finished his SEC, I'm trying to think, remember his SEC championship game record was. I mean, it was something like 9-1 or something like that. It was incredible. I was just calling around a couple of folks. The first person I called is the one who I think maybe not is closest to Nick Saban, but I think adores and even loves Nick Saban more than anybody I ever talked to, outside of maybe Miss Terry. And that's Pete Jenkins. He's an old defensive line coach. Pete is 82, and he's worked with Saban off and on in a consulting role for 25 years. And he's kind of served as a confidant to Saban about some things. I don't know that – I guess I feel like I could say this now that Saban's retiring, but Pete Jenkins once told me that Saban called him when the Texas job came open in 2013, I believe, and asked him, what do you think? So that's how close they are. And he just adores Saban. And he said a couple of things. I want to share what Pete Jenkins told me earlier.
What did he think of the Texas job? he's going to Texas. Texas still thinks they're getting him.
I don't think he advised a move to Texas. Yeah, I think I remember him saying something like, I told Nick, I told Coach Saban, he wouldn't call him Nick. I told Coach Saban that too many cooks in the kitchen over there in Texas. So, but one of the things was, he was shocked and stunned. He did not expect it. It was something that. Despite the buzz kind of about this, right, the last few days and maybe the last couple weeks, there's been more buzz than ever about this. But still, people were pretty stunned because, we're a week and a half after the last game. And so I think a lot of people thought if it would happen, it was going to happen last week, maybe even early last week. And when it didn't, I think people thought that it wasn't going to happen. So he was stunned. And he was crying. He broke down on the phone with me, and he said he focused on what Nick Saban means to college football, the industry, the evolving industry. And he said He cares about coaches. He cares about players. He cares about the game. He's the biggest advocate for college football in the country. And he's incredibly smart. If he was the president of Ford, the damn Ford car would be better. If he was president of the United States, we'd have a better country. You know, maybe he's got politics in his future.
Tuberville. Tuberville.
That's right.
One more L for That's Tuberville.
Right. I've got a conspiracy.
Saban comes back and says, I'm getting one more on you, Tuberville. I'm running for your Senate seat, and you're the Auburn guy, and I'm Roll Tide, and I'm winning. He could run as the dang Green Party in Alabama, endorsed by AOC or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Him and Bernie Sanders, they'd win. He'd beat him. Yeah.
I'm here to tell you, here's the conspiracy theory on what Nick Saban's doing next. Who's on College Game Day and has just landed in a storm with the ESPN?
Yeah.
Oh, Pat McAfee.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. McAfee. He's not the jokester. He could take over for Coach Corso. I don't know. He's going
to
do something.
He doesn't need to.
I don't think he wants to do 22 weeks a year on Saturdays.
Well, he probably doesn't. But I he's a hell of a lot more likely to do that than he is being a senator.
Well, that's true. That's true. I think one of the things, Pat, to your point about the guys, he set this standard. He set this blueprint. And it's funny because he really didn't get going until he got to Alabama. He was a good coach at Michigan State. They had one big year. Got to LSU. They won a title. But they weren't what he became. They were very good that year. But everyone wins a title at LSU. Brian Kelly.
So far.
When he got back from the Dolphins, that program sucked. It was 51-55 the 10 years before. It had three of those 10 seasons. They went 2-6 in the SEC.
Mm.
Program was a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
They were bad. It was like the Mike Price, you know, remember that one? It's Rolling Baby, which I don't think actually got said, but there was like a lawsuit. Yeah. I don't know, but whatever. Yeah. It was a lot of not goods. The whole program was a mess. There was like infighting. It was like, you know, every regent and chancellor had a say. And he took over and got that thing going. But once he got it going, he became this like North Star for the uber competitive.
Yes.
And he got these guys. I'm not going to say he's a bad recruiter because he's a great recruiter, but he's a different type of recruiter. He's not trying to be your friend. He's not cool. He's this old dude from West Virginia who talks super serious, and he walks in your living room and says, how great do you want to be? Are you willing to make the sacrifices it takes to be? It's incredibly inspiring stuff if you want to hear it. But he isn't smoking cigars and pulling up in a Lambo and all that stuff, right? But he got these guys. The Dante Hightowers, the Drake Kirkpatricks, that just ha-ha Clinton Dix. I don't know. I'm trying to think of some of these guys, some of the great ones he's had. Mark Ingram, just tough, mentally tough, physically tough, right? Tua and Jalen. Bryce Young. I don't know. On and on. Devonta Smith told this story I saw at college at Alabama. He said he went to two parties the entire time he was at Alabama because he was so focused on making the NFL. They won the national championship. The night they got back, he went to a party, and he went to one other, he said, the whole time. The rest of the time, all he did was school and football. And he got those kind of guys that were like, I am the alpha dog. I will do whatever. I am going to follow this plan and do whatever it takes. And so not only were they great players, but they were just relentless. And I think that was the key. I don't know how he did it, but the guys that like what he had to say, it's a little like how Harbaugh's guys play so well for Harbaugh, and they're better than their recruiting stars. Because it's like, yeah, this guy's weird, but like, I love him. Like Blake Corbs is like, I love him, right? You go, well, Blake Corum wasn't the best running back, but he's perfect for them, right? He gets those guys, and he had these just focused, professionally minded guys at 18 that were like, that's who I want to be. That's how my dad raised me. I want to play for Nick Saban, and I want to do this. Even if it's not fun, I want to do it. And it sort of just built on itself. So he got these guys. And the same thing with the coaches. Like, you never stopped working. You never stopped getting ass chewings. Yeah. Normally, I don't like, you know, right? Who's getting their ass chewed out on this? And, you know, the relentless demands. These young coaches would die to coach for them. The old guys would come back to try to get a little car wash.
Yep.
I think that was it. He just became this larger-than-life figure at Alabama that he wasn't before. And he got the best coaches and the best players of all a certain mindset. And, like, you know, like, maybe, like, you needed Pete Carroll to coach those cool West Coast guys, right? Like, he could handle a certain type of player that maybe weren't for Nick. But what Nick got were that kid, that family.
Yeah. No, it's a great point. Well, I do think there was a gravitation there, but also I would say if there were guys that came in the program that were maybe a little cavalier, that the program either got them some religion or they left, because I just don't think even if you didn't gravitate as a type A, you know, worker, focus, achiever guy, if you had to learn to be that way if you're going to get on the field. Competition was too good. The standard was too high. Minka Fitzpatrick, Levi Wallace. I mean, you could go on and on and on and on of the guys that were that way with that program. And it was a wonder to behold. I mean, they just would never, ever crack. And the amazing thing, there's so many different amazing facets. But this was a guy won at LSU that title, and excuse me, won his first couple of titles at Alabama with just overwhelming defense. And it was just shut everybody down and run the ball, and that was it. And then the game started to change, and at first Nick complained about the game changing, but then he changed with it. And then they played faster, and they threw it, and they by 2018, 19, 20, they were as good throwing the ball as you could be. I mean, the 2020 National Championship team with Mac Jones throwing to Devonta Smith and a bunch of other studs, they absolutely torched through the season. They had one single score game, 52-46 against Florida in the SEC Championship game. And if memory serves, they were ahead by two scores most of the game, and Florida would score and come back or whatever. You know, I mean, they just stormed through that year with a team that really was not like the teams that Nick Saban won titles with in 2003, 2009, 2011, 2012. But he would change, and he changed off the field too. He was complaining like hell about NIL. Well, guess what? Then 2023, he signs the number one class in the country. Probably came around to NIL a little bit there. He had kept adapting because he wanted to keep winning.
Yeah, he evolved. You know, he evolved when other coaches didn't. And it's the Pete Jenkins quote about, you know, if he was president, our country would be better. If he ran the Ford industry, you know, the Fords would be better. Just anything he did probably would benefit from him. I want to mention two things here that kind of tie into one another. I got a text from a former Saban staff member. I am so lucky he made us all better. And because of him, I'm a better person, worker, and advocate for players. He demanded a lot of us, but he always listened. I think he demanded so much people around him, he made them like himself in his mold. You know, he wanted them in his mold, and he hammered it and hammered it and hammered it, a work ethic in the demand. And take, for instance, how he went out 2 days after Alabama's semifinal loss. He was in his office working. Today, he was on the SEC head coach's call.
10 a.m. or whatever, right?
Yeah. And he interviewed coaches for open staff positions both yesterday and this morning. So I think that shows you the work ethic and the demand that he placed on people around him. He also expected of himself. A coach quote tweeted that I tweeted that out there. And a coach quote tweeted it, and I think it's very fitting. The epitome of do your job to the best of your ability until it is not your job anymore. That just says everything about Nick Saban.
Yeah. Yeah. One more before we go to break and we'll do the who's next. I remember this story I wrote about him, or this scene. I don't know why I just remembered this. He was after a game at LSU, they won, and he had the coaches show, right? You know, everyone's got the 30-minute coaches show. So yeah. Mm-hmm. I watched, and he did it before they left on the bus. He came, like, he would do press conference. Like, the guys were standing there, whoever's hosting the show. Like, sorry, I can't remember. But they're standing on the field with the camera, and it's, like, rolling. Yeah. And, like, he's going to walk up, and they have to be, like, into his shot. Because he's going to do two. He did two segments that were like 6.5 minutes. And that was it. And then the rest of the show, they would piece together with like film or whatever the heck they were doing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nick Saban figured out to do a 30-minute show in 12 minutes. And these guys were like they were ready. Like it was like he walked up, stood there for 1 second, like, and we're back from break. And here we are with Nick Saban. Right. Like it was like it was the pressure on everybody to do it. Like you don't want Nick Saban standing around waiting for Jimmy in the booth. Get that tape running. That was not gonna end. It'd be an ass chewing.
I've got two anecdotes along those lines. We can do them after the break.
No, I'll do it. Do it. What the heck? We'll do it before the break.
All right. No. my last assignment for ESPN when I worked there was to interview Nick Saban the day before they played Florida. One of those, you know, three-question on-camera things. And so I had to meet him at their hotel room in Ocala, Florida. They were going to play in Gainesville the next day. And, you know, everybody knows that's the deal with Saban. Like, you must be ready when you need to be ready. But we had a 50-yard walk from the bus into the hotel to do the interview. And so I'm trying to make small talk. And I was thinking back where he coached with Tom Crean at Michigan State. So they were friends, and I know Tom well. And he had told me this anecdote about Jim Harbaugh, who's Crean's brother-in-law, getting some two-minute offense advice from Saban during a Final Four when they were both there.
Oh, boy.
And, so I bring this up to Saban as we're walking.
Involve going for it on 4th-and-2 with a little pass. This could be a big scoop, Pat.
Yeah, right. No, it did not. Okay. Not to my knowledge.
Okay.
I don't know what it involved, because here's what happened. I'm trying to small talk Saban on our walk there, and I go through this, you know, a little bit stem whining little anecdote. He says not a word. He just keeps walking. It's like, I'm not here for the small talk, dude. That was the thought bubble over his head. I'm not here to chat. Let's just get in and do this.
God, I love that man even more. He just ignored you. Yeah. That is my...
He literally ignored me.
I wish. Yeah. Coach Saban, come join the pod. You can take Pat's spot.
Second one. Rose Bowl this year. I'm told like the supposedly the most uncomfortable 4 minutes of the entire Rose Bowl run-up was when Saban had to stand around waiting for Mickey Mouse to come over for a picture. And they'd do a photo op at Disney.
That picture was great, too.
Yeah. Like, you get Saban to Nick stand still for 4 minutes waiting for Mickey Mouse? Not pleasant.
So that would be a conversation, because Jim probably wouldn't say anything. But if he did, it wouldn't make any sense. And Nick wouldn't say a word and wasn't listening. They probably got along famously.
Probably did.
Yeah. You have one, Ross?
No, not really. I've heard stories like that before about, you know, no small talk. So in March, I interviewed him in his office in Tuscaloosa, and that was the interview that produced the story about the SEC schedule format, if we all remember. Oh, right. And I remember walking in that interview and just not, you know, making sure I did not do small talk. And so like for the first time ever, you know, I didn't, hey, how you doing? How are things going? How's the family? Like, it was just like, okay, I put my recorder on the table and let's ride.
I have found that if you say right away, in interviews. I know you're busy. You don't have any time to waste. So let's get right to it. And then you're right to it. They like that. They coaches love that. And they end up hanging out longer. Because they're like, that's a good trick. Young reporters, please take note.
Respect their time.
Yeah. They love it when you tell them that you're nothing and they're everything. Because that's what the hell they're thinking. I can assure you that. All right. So Saban's departing. Who's next? This has been like a parlor game for the last 10 years. This is not going to be easy. Especially now, I think. I think it would have been easier to get who you wanted 5 years ago. But right now, it is a tremendous opportunity. Alabama has every single resource you could possibly want to win. It is an incredibly tradition-rich place. It has incredible loyal fans and a national fan base. The brand is unbelievable. You're taking over a loaded roster with momentum. You're in the SEC. You got it. It is fantastic. That said, there's a whole bunch of places that also have a lot of that. Saban is what took it over the top. And you are now replacing Nick Saban. What was what'd you say? The 3-loss season was 2010.
Yeah.
You lose three loss. You got to live up to this standard that Saban the last 3 years hasn't been able to live up to the same standard. I mean, he was damn good, but there's a whole bunch of Feinbaum callers who ain't going to be real happy with a loss or a fifth rank recruiting class. So the pressure here is enormous. Getting coaches to move from one Power 5 job to another Power 5 job is very difficult these days. Everybody can pay. Everybody's got opportunities. It's not like it used to be. You don't have to be at Alabama to win a national title. 5 years ago, maybe you did. But with a 12-team playoff, with NIL and the transfer portal spreading talent out, with the Big Ten and the SEC being so large now, I don't think you do. Michigan just beat Washington for the national championship. That would have been unfathomable 5 years ago. It isn't anymore. So I think this is a very challenging hire. They're going to get a good coach, but you don't just snap your finger and say, which one do we want? Am I wrong or right there, Pat?
Oh, I think you're largely correct. You're right that you can't just count on Alabama being, you know, the top 1, 2, 3 programs, irregardless, and getting anyone you absolutely desire. Like, one of the big questions there would be Steve Sarkisian. Are you already in a place where you can do everything there in Texas that you can do in Alabama? So why go? Kirby Smart's at his alma mater, but you can certainly do everything at Georgia that you could do at Alabama. And then you get down to that next tier, and there's a lot of other places, to your point. And especially, yes, the access to the playoff is there. The money, theoretically, to put together a roster is there. And, you know, at 10, 12, 15 places. So real challenge. And the other thing that's just the psychological factor of, do you want to be the man who follows the man? Most places, that's pretty daunting. Ask, you know, does anybody remember who followed John Wooden? Anybody remember who followed Dean Smith? Anybody remember who followed Bear Bryant? Probably not, because it didn't go very well for those people. So it's better to be the man who follows the man who followed the man.
Yeah.
But we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, I had we just posted a story on Yahoo that I wrote about kind of the next steps and who are those names and what this will be like. And I wrote in there, you know, who even wants the job? As crazy as that is to say, and I had an industry kind of source say, doesn't matter who you hire, somebody is going to have to go in there and take an ass whipping. So I think there's a a low expectation that somebody can keep Nick Saban's successful streak alive and win like he won, probably because nobody's ever done it before, you know, and nobody else has ever done it before. So why would somebody else, why would his replacement? And, you know, look, the candidate pool is it's just not, there's not that one guy, right? For big jobs like this, oftentimes you look at like Nick Saban's coaching tree, you know, big names on Nick Saban's coaching tree or something. Well, I mean, Mario Cristobal at Miami and Billy Napier at Florida are not doing it, right? They're not doing it at their current places. They'd probably not be very celebrated hires. You know, you look at the hot names, Kalen DeBoer at Washington, obviously, $12 million buyout. Dan Lanning at Oregon, $20 million buyout. And then so you look at those two with those big buyouts, I mean, it's a lot of money, right? It's a lot of money. And then you look at maybe a less expensive option, who has had success this year, $4 million buyout for Mike Norvell at Florida State. And then Steve Sarkisian, right? Texas was at Alabama, really highly thought of, I think, in Tuscaloosa still. But would he leave Austin for Tuscaloosa after getting Texas rolling? And then there's Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss, used the transfer portal to amass five-star roster talent and win 29 games in 3 years. But those who kind of know Greg Byrne, maybe the AD at Alabama and kind of how he works, would kind of doubt that that he would take a chance there on Kiffin. And then, of course, you got the group of like more proven guys, James Franklin, Dabo Swinney, maybe even Lance Leipold at Kansas, the guys that have won for a long time in college football. And then lastly, you've got more unconventional guys, NFL guys, Mike Vrabel, Dan Quinn, Bill O'Brien, Todd Monken, even, you know, Tommy Reese is 31 years old. He's offensive coordinator. I can't imagine, right, a promotion to the head job. But those are kind of some unconventional names because you don't have that one, feels like you don't have that one guaranteed guy. Although I would say in this story, I interviewed an athletic director who said, quote, knowing Greg, Kalen DeBoer sounds like the guy he'd hire.
Good list. Can we add to it? Go ahead, Dan.
Add to it. I was going to run through the names and say what percent chance do we think.
Oh, that's a good idea.
You want to do that?
You do that.
Sounds good.
Yep.
Kirby Smart.
This is good. You're going to make me do bad math again.
Zero.
Though. Remember we did percentage?
Zero.
You get 0 to 100 for everybody.
Every guy
right?
gets yeah. 0 to 100.
Yeah.
Zero, yeah. right?
Okay.
Zero. Yeah, zero.
This is
Kirby
the question
Smart.
Is, zero. Will they zero. Be the coach or would they accept the job? Because remember, we had this confusion last time.
God dang. Will they be offered and will they accept the job?
Okay. So two.
Kirby zero, right?
Kirby zero because they won't offer it to him because they know he won't take
it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. For sure. Same. Zero. Yeah.
Dabo.
Low. 15%.
Yeah. 10%.
I don't think he gets offered and I don't know that he'd take it either. But maybe a little
less chance he gets offered than he would take it, I think.
Yeah. I don't know.
Alabama native, Alabama alum.
Yeah. Needs a little fresh jump.
Needs mm-hmm. a little fresh yep. jump.
Yep. Yeah.
Has the ego to do it.
That, you know.
Totally has the ego to do it.
Things he said about roster building, right? The last 2 years.
Has nobody in the portal.
And if this is 2020.
Still hasn't.
If this was 2020, right? You know.
Yeah.
I'd feel differently.
All right.
I would.
Sark.
Now you're starting to talk a little. Because to Ross's point that he made, I think that people in Alabama loved Sark. Administratively, the Saban staff, everybody thought highly of Sark, and he's red hot. But as I said earlier, I'm not sure you leave Texas for Alabama when you can do everything you want at Texas.
Yep.
And why go be Saban's successor? So I'd say 33%.
Yeah, I'll go 25% because, and the deal is not, you know, not the the offering issue, because I do think they like Steve Sarkisian a lot. It is the accepting that job.
Yeah, I think he stays. Joey Freshwater, Lane Kiffin. I think 8%. The legend of Joey Freshwater was made in Tuscaloosa. If you don't know that story, there was unconfirmed reports that somebody looking just like Lane Kiffin was at the singles bar calling himself Joey Freshwater. I don't know whether.
Yeah, less than 8%. I'm taking it down to 3%.
5%.
Can't see them offering him that job.
No.
Alabama's a buttoned up operation now.
Yeah.
We'll see how they are. In the-
All right.
Yeah, Greg Byrne taking that risk. It just, you know, I don't see it.
Maybe he's sober. He's, you know, he doesn't want the tweeting.
No, I know.
Mike Norvell.
I mean, there should be some traction there. Yeah. 30%.
I think 20%. I think he's a real candidate. He should be a real candidate.
Yeah.
A.
Yeah. This is my
credible work. And B, he's not moving power two to power two job.
Yeah.
Right.
30%. Yeah. That was my, so far, the highest one. I think that's, you know, he's got a very low, like I mentioned, he got a very low buyout. I'm sure Florida State's going to up the ante, right, and try to keep him. But that is in, I would guess that's a very attractive name for Greg Byrne.
Dan Lanning, Oregon.
Yeah, that's one I think is, it makes all kinds of sense. Might make too much sense. And maybe Lanning's like, no, I don't want to do it. He's 37. Why go into a thankless job when you got a good job? But you're also going into the Big Ten, and that's going to be hard. So Lanning was a GA under Saban. He knows how the operation works. Saban knows who he is, and I'd like to think that Saban will have a little bit of input on this. Then he went with Saban the younger, Kirby Smart, to Georgia and killed it there. He was defensive coordinator. He recruited a lot of their great defensive studs. And now he goes to Oregon, and what's he like, 22-5 or something like that so far at Oregon? I mean, doing great work there. So knows the SEC, has recruited the South, has worked at Alabama, 40%.
Yeah, I'd probably give it the same I gave Norvell, 30%. And I would not give it higher because of the buyout of $20 million, even though this is monopoly money we're talking about in a lot of these ways. I still think, and you combine with, he took his name out of the A&M, and A&M's not Alabama, and Alabama's not A&M, but he took his name out of that A&M job really, really quickly. And that was, again, midseason, and it's not the same job as Alabama, but there is certainly a little feeling up there in Eugene that he's there, and he really wants to be there. So, yeah, 30%.
Recruiting so well.
Yes.
37 years old, got so much going on at Oregon, making so much money. I think he stays. I don't think he wants it. Eventually, maybe he leaves the Ducks. But if they're as good as they look they're going to be, he's going to have his crack at something like Alabama at some point.
Sure.
I don't think he goes. Kalen DeBoer?
I'm going less.
Less?
Yeah, no, 20. I you know what, just not much natural fit there. Phenomenal coach, obviously. Ridiculously good coach. But, you know, no geographic fit, and his personality, you know, look, Saban could do what he did because he was just a monomaniacal fanatic about being serious about ball, and Kalen DeBoer is very serious about ball too, but I don't know. I don't get the sense that he's like, I need a bigger spotlight at all. I think Washington's every bit as much of a big spotlight, unless maybe Michigan opens. So I'm downplaying Kalen DeBoer to 20%.
I want someone who's got Southern recruiting ability.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Never done.
Now you could hire that for your staff, right? And everybody, I always go back to the fit thing. I always go back to Nick Saban at LSU.
Right. You win, it works. Brian Kelly's recruiting
can work
well.
Right then.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, right. So it can work. But I do kind of agree with Pat. Especially knowing Kalen just a little bit, kind of how he goes about himself. He isn't necessarily seeking that big spotlight and all that, and to follow somebody like that. But man, that's tempting, and I'll put that a little lower than I had than Norvell in landing at. I'll have it at 25%.
Franklin, James Franklin.
No, why would Alabama want offered. Him?
It's going to be a lot of people saying no. Just not have the big game.
You're going to get down. You're going to get down a list potentially. You're going to get down your list potentially. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Vrabel.
He's like a fifth guy on the list. Vrabel, interesting, no, but he's a Midwest USC, or I mean Ohio State. No, I don't think so.
He's sitting there. He's gonna get an NFL job.
Yeah.
Or he's gonna wait for Ryan Day. I think. Who else we got? We got anyone? Harbaugh?
One of my favorite choices has not come up yet.
Oh, what's that?
D'Amico Ryans. Former Alabama great linebacker, Bessemer, Alabama native, 10-7 in his first year in the NFL, his only year as a head coach, took over a 3-13-1 Houston Texans team, won the AFC South. They're in the playoff with a rookie quarterback. Very, very impressive. And at some point in time, Alabama will have to, presumably, break the color barrier with a football coach. Has never been done there before, but I'd look at him and say, man, tempting. He did not play for Saban. He was pre-Saban, 2002 to 2005. But holy moly, has there been a more impressive rookie head coach in the NFL in a while?
No, but do you leave? You got C.J. Stroud and rolling.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying you leave, but if I'm Alabama, I'm calling him. He's getting a call. He may not be the first call, but he's getting a call.
Yeah. Interesting one.
No college experiences. I have assistant coaches, recruiter.
I don't see him taking it. But yes. Very, very interesting. Bill O'Brien. I mess. Can't see it.
Yeah.
This would be very there would be some anger. Anyone else in the SEC? It's hard. Like I know it's like, well, Bama's gonna win, but Florida should just always win. You know, like,
yeah,
they should all, right. Whatever. USC should always win. Michigan should always win. Then they didn't. Like,
right.
It's nothing not guaranteed. Is guaranteed. Texas should always win.
Right. Mike DeBose happened. Mike Shula happened. Yeah. You know, I mean,
I'm guessing that Alabama wouldn't do this, but I'm just throwing his name out there. I didn't even put it in my story because I didn't think about it at the time. But, you know, A&M pursued it pretty heavily, but would they think about Mark Stoops at all?
I don't think so either. Just not enough eye-popping success. Good success.
Yeah.
But have you had that breakthrough where you are competing for a national championship?
How about recency bias of Eli Drinkwitz?
Yeah, well.
I mean, it's funny because if you're in the right spot, you don't – I mean, look at, like, some of the best – hires have been assistants, right? Dabo, Mark Stoops. We'll see how Ryan Day plays out, but he certainly hasn't been a total bust, right? Mm-hmm. You know, if you got the right program and the right guy, you don't have to have any, you know, you just promote and boom, there it is. Other times, you know, what experience, what pop did any of those guys have?
It's hard I'm to sorry. Say. I have to interrupt, Dan. There's a crowd gathered. This is live. You know, as we're taping the pod, there's a crowd that's gathered at the Saban statue in front of Bryant Denny. They've not only put like flowers and other things as if he's dead, there's a crowd and they're chanting anyone but Dabo. Oh. Anyone but Dabo. This is incredible. Incredible.
Why are you so
should see the statue,
Dabo?
Though, full of flowers. I don't know. A lot of people are down on Dabo. That's why I put that percentage so low. You know, and I would have felt differently even 2 years ago. Certainly 3 or 4 years ago. And certainly 5 years ago, it would have felt like an automatic. But they've dipped. You know, he's at his worst probably 2 years. And
my stock in Clemson.
He doesn't help himself with what he how he talks about
young Boeheim,
NIL, athlete compensation in the portal
isn't working.
Yeah.
William Christopher, I still believe in you. I'm here
might
for
be
you.
The only one.
How about Harbaugh takes it?
Yeah, sure.
The plot twist. All right.
One other name. I got one other name.
Oh, all right, all right. Because, here we go, Pat.
Well, just because people are going to throw this out there, you know, like the gambling websites and stuff. I would like Ross Dellinger to tell me the first name of the coach at Colorado.
Dion.
Yes. Dion.
Dion.
I don't think so, but they're in an Aflac commercial together, you know. Come on, those are ties, right?
Cannot imagine that happening. But I'll tell you this. The highest percentage I gave, I think, was Mike Norvell at 30%. Now, what if the Florida State job opens?
Well, so Alabama would not hire Dion, however the hell you say it. Coach Prime. He'd like to be called Coach Prime. I will call him Coach Prime. I don't think Alabama would hire Coach Prime.
No, I don't think so.
But, man, he'd be good there. No.
I mean, talk about a guy who doesn't think the job was too big for him.
No, kidding. Me, no worries there.
Yeah, no.
The problem with Coach, oh, man.
There's a few problems.
He doesn't recruit the way everyone else recruits.
Right.
And he can get some really good players. I mean, forget the portal. You can recruit at Alabama. God, he'd be unbelievable there, though.
Yeah.
I mean, he wouldn't be signing 7 kids at Alabama. He'd sign a lot of really good players.
Yeah.
But no, he's coloring outside the lines. Alabama, because of Saban, sees itself as IBM.
Yeah.
In fact, they're a whole lot more like the Feinbaum show callers. But they don't like to think of themselves that way.
No.
It's a back road operation. It can descend. Let's just put it that way. But in this case, they like to think of themselves. And so Dion, I don't think is going to call it. That would have been a good one. But Florida State, I mean, if Norvell left, the pressure to hire Coach Prime would be enormous. The dominoes that could fall are just incredible right now.
Yeah. That's the thing. You think you get through the coaching carousel and we might have Michigan and Alabama both open.
Yeah.
We already got Alabama for sure.
I think Michigan will go with Sharon Moore, sure. But maybe Kalen DeBoer can make a run at it. But I think Sharon Moore has got that job. If Harbaugh goes, I don't know. I talked to someone who talked to Harbaugh. Said he was most excited about it. They're having a parade on Saturday. He's just like
he's just excited for the parade.
No 60-year-old man has ever been more excited about a parade.
They should let him drive his riding mower in the parade.
No, he's just gonna be on the float like it's, you know. He said, "Who doesn't like a parade? Who likes a parade?" That's my question.
Nah, don't be that much of a hater, Dan.
You like a parade? Like you want to go to a parade?
I mean, I don't like the Rose Parade because it happens to dictate part of the postseason.
When was the last time you went to a parade, Pat?
It might have been the Tournament of Roses Parade in 1995, New Year's Day, 1996.
You love parades so much you haven't been to one since 1999.
I did not say I love parades. Not say I love them.
Nobody likes
parades. Parades are not objectionable. They're not objectionable.
Praise, you bring your little kids and they look at this fire truck. And then once they're old enough, you never go to another parade.
Except there's a nice Jim Kentucky Harbaugh. Derby parade every year.
And you haven't been once.
Broadway?
You've never
gone.
I've
been a couple of times. But I will say, usually the biggest thing is actually trying to cross the street from the Courier Journal building to where my car was. That was the problem with that parade.
So, no.
No.
I was goon-handed out of a Disney World parade one time.
You were what?
What? Goon-handed?
Goon-handed. Yeah, goon-handed. I got pulled out by security cave and got me. I had snuck up to a second-level building that was, I guess, off-limits, but I wanted a better look.
Goon-handed. You climbed up, like, inside those fake buildings in Disney World?
Door was open. It got to the second floor. I think Snow White saw me. I saw her talking to an earpiece, and then I was out.
Snow White knocked you out?
Cardboard castle or whatever.
She saw me, she waved, and then she got me out of there, I guess.
Goon-handed. That's a good phrase. I like it.
Goon-handed. Yeah, that's an interesting thing. Ross took off on us. He had a dinner to catch.
Yeah.
Kind of rude.
Ross at these. Ross, we're at the NCAA convention for backstory for people. Ross and I are at the NCAA convention trying to cover that, and Saban just blew the whole thing out of the water. But he's gone off to have a dinner. On,
yeah. Sub rule 28-B-2.
Yeah.
We'll get a report.
Ross is a little
time.
More enthusiastic about these convention things than I am. I think I feel about the NCAA convention about like Dan feels about parades.
Not a parade guy. I did go to a parade last year. It literally ran in front of my house. They had to reroute the parade on July 4th, and I went out and looked for about 5 minutes.
You went out and looked with disdain?
I had a beer. I offered a guy a beer, but he didn't want it. I was drinking at the parade. I'm not doing parades. I don't know. But Harbaugh's excited about this parade. So until the parade, we may not get any tea leaves from him because he's so focused on his big day in a parade.
Yeah. Unbelievable. He can always find something to focus on other than telling us what he wants to do.
Just briefly, Charlie Baker, NCAA president, says that he does not regret the unorthodox manner in which he took the advanced scouting sign stealing information and went crazy. I don't regret doing it because sitting on that information, given the comprehensiveness of it, I think we would have put everyone, including Michigan, in an awful place. I think Michigan would disagree with that part, but whatever. As it was out in the public domain, and people either made adjustments or didn't. At the end of the day, no one believes at this point that Michigan didn't win the national title fair and square. Part of the reason I thought it was important to talk to the Big Ten and Michigan about this is it might affect the outcome of games. I don't believe at the end of the season that it did. Charlie Baker clearing Michigan. Thoughts?
Yeah. Yes. I listened to the audio from that interview, and I agree with him. You know, I agree. I think the NCAA handled it correctly. And I think that Michigan eventually exonerated itself in terms of whether this team was good enough to win a national championship. Did they still violate rules? We'll see, but it certainly appears, yes, they did, with an intent to do it, thinking at least one person, and perhaps more, thought they needed to do it. Did they? Probably not. But is there any reason to say that Michigan wasn't the best team in football, or college football? No.
I would say that two thoughts on this. One, his enforcement staff can't be too pleased with that comment. Please investigate this crime, but we don't. It didn't matter, says the boss.
Well, that will certainly give a leverage ship, one would think, to Michigan.
Yes. Plenty of people, not me, but plenty of people, are not in agreement that that this was nothing. And the spirited nature of how the story broke, the NCAA rushing forward without any investigation, was part of it. I think it was handled with little experience, is how I would say. I don't know how you necessarily go through it. I have to think about it. But the idea that at the end of the day, no one believes at this point that Michigan didn't win the national title fair and square. I don't believe that to be an accurate statement.
No,
I don't know where he's coming up with that one.
But I still say, like, if they are in the midst of an ongoing cheating deal that directly involves gaining competitive advantage, then I have no problem with them going to the Big Ten and to Michigan and telling them, we got this information.
Yeah. I guess my point is the fact that at the end of the day, they won all the games shows it wasn't nearly the advantage that they pretended at the beginning.
No, but it was a clear attempt to get the advantage.
But it was the advantage that they could have gotten was small. I just feel like he's talking himself in a circle.
Well,
I mean, he might be, and that'll be up to the, you know, Michigan's
if it didn't matter
representation.
Then, I mean, it's nice of him to be like, oh, we just brought this up. No big deal. It, you know, they proved it was just fair and square. I'm not disagreeing with that, but the no big deal part, like, pretty big deal to the players.
Yeah, and I mean, actually,
pretty big deal to the coaches. A lot of people that had no idea what was going on. I'm going to assume that, you know, like, pretty big deal to those guys, Charlie.
Yeah, no, having listened to the audio, I don't think he said it was a no big deal. And the words that came out of his mouth were not interpreted that way by me. That
yeah.
It was,
well, he's
they
saying,
felt it was a very big deal, and that's why they went forward with it.
But then at the end of the day, they won the title fair and square. It's like, which is it? I don't know. I think he's trying to walk back the initial thing. That's how we'll see what else he comes up with. Interesting comments. I do appreciate that he answers the question, though. Good for him on that. Because generally they will just sit and let the worst bit go out. Like I said, his enforcement staff's probably not too pleased with him, but hey, that's the part of it. He definitely operates in a different manner. Anyway, that is our show. We won't get into the other proposals. God knows when the next emergency pod could be. Who knows what the hell is coming next?
I have one parting theory. The dude that jumped into the Bass Pro thing in Leeds.
Yeah.
Naked. Who's
think that scared Saban away?
No, I think he knew. He knew he had a premonition. He had a premonition Saban was going to retire, and he lost his mind.
Yeah.
That was it. He was reacting to the...
That explains it. Doesn't explain the other part, though.
No, the other part remains a vast mystery.
I don't... Not one I want to solve, either.
No.
Not one I want to solve.
Yeah.
All right. Stay tuned. We'll be back. I don't know when. But we will be back. Ross is going skiing, so it might just be Pat and I next time. But might be this week. Might be Monday. I don't know. Could be any point. Enjoy your parades. If you got one, go to the parade. Have the wonder of childhood like Jim Harbaugh. Approach each day like Jim Harbaugh getting to ride in a parade. It's a good way to live. It's much better than my cynical, nasty, dispirited self. Don't you think?
See? The only person I know just publicly hates parades.
A lot of people don't, more people don't go to parades than go to them.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably true, but not because of like active dislike, I don't think.
What's so good about it? What happens? What would you know? You haven't been to a parade since 1995. What happens at a parade that is so exciting?
You just get to see floats and pageantry and bands and
yeah. Usually the parades aren't that good.
People throw batons in the air. And,
yeah, but a lot of times it's like some junior high band and the you know, or it's like it's not really that. Even and then,
Wessel, just hating on junior high bands now too. Adding that,
I'm not going to the parade. I'm not going to parade. I don't know. Maybe. Enjoy your parade, Michigan fans. You've earned it. I don't want to rain on your parade. All right. Ross, still out. All right, that's our show. We'll talk to you guys later.